And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, you have always talked about how important messaging is in politics. And this week, one of the country's premier political messaging guys died at the age of 101, but he didn't seem to be in politics. I'm talking about Norman Lear, the guy who developed All in the Family, which was possibly one of the most important political shows of the 1970s. And he followed it up with a group of shows, each of which was controversial and political.
Yeah, and don't forget he set up that organization, Citizens for the American Way or something like that.
Yeah, right.
But, and this is an example of when you're messaging to know your audience or your audiences. Sometimes you have different audiences, and what you're saying may not be what they're hearing. We have the famous All in the Family with Archie Bunker. And
my recollection when that show came on was that a lot of people on the left didn't like that show because they said it made this racist Archie Bunker an endearing character, it made racism endearing, right. And it didn't really attack it.
Right. Lear thought that he was exposing it and making it unpalatable, when in fact it was, as you just said, making him somewhat endearing, and a large group of what we would now call Reagan Democrats, and now the MAGA group, and identified with him. They thought what he was saying out loud was what they were thinking.
And that's exactly what they say about Trump.
Yeah, exactly. Remember in the 60s, it became taboo, so to speak, to say racist things out loud. And of course, even now, just before Trump, you had all this stuff on college campuses, which we're going to talk about. But yeah, so he was trying to message something that this is bigotry and small-mindedness, and we should be seeing it for what it is and moving beyond it. And a large segment of the audience was seeing it as something to identify with and not think was bad. And I'm not sure Norman ever figured that out. And I'm not sure the left has figured that out.
Well, I think the left has figured it out because they attacked him for that very thing.
Well, they attacked him, but they still have problems on the messaging. Things that they're saying or they intend to say aren't being heard as such, but are being admired by this MAGA group or whatever. So
the truth is that just because you think you're saying something doesn't mean you're saying it, as you said at the beginning.
Right.
Your intentions are irrelevant. It's what the result is relevant.
Yes. And one thing that the right is very good at is redefining things or twisting things or taking things and repurposing the messages. They know how to do this far better than the left does. And it continues to be an ongoing problem for Democrats, for the as I said, for progressives, for the left wing. They just They don't know how to spin.
Because spinning is not in their DNA. They think that the appeal to reason works. The appeal to reason only works ultimately. It's only an ultimate working. And the between the statement and rationality comes emotion.
That's exactly. That was the. I didn't want to interrupt you, but that's it. It's more about emotion than anything else. And well, that where you get back to what's the matter with Kansas, right?
Yeah.
People go voting against their economic interests because of these other social ideas and these things that make them feel better, even though it doesn't get them anywhere. It actually puts them behind.
I think what the progressive politicians have to realize is that it isn't merely or simply the economic interest. The economic interest implies an entirely different worldview, an entirely different psychology, an entirely different morality. If you ignore the economic interest, even as economic interest, of course, you're not doing yourself any favors. But if you stick to the reductionism of an economic interest, you're not explaining to people the comprehensive nature of their actual situation in society, which is in the base, originates from their economic interest, but which has ramifications way beyond it. And of course, if you're not ready to talk about any of it, you're opening the field up to the enemy to distort whatever the enemy wants to distort. And the enemy is ready to distort everything.
Yeah. Oh, well, Falk rule number three is control the communications.
Yep. That's right.
And it's about constructing a message, disseminating the message. And then the key to effective messaging is what all the dictators understood, which is repetition. Propaganda is based on repetition of things. Even things that people know or think are wrong, after it being repeated so many more times, it becomes normalized.
Yeah,
and that, of course, Ruth Ben-Ghiat keeps talking about. That's what Donald Trump is doing. We had an example of what Trump was doing this week interview.
Trump, I really want to emphasize this point. Trump is Archie Bunker in real life.
Yeah.
I mean, Trump comes from Queens. That's where Archie Bunker came from. Trump, Trump's whole psychology is Bunker's psychology. His whole way of speaking is the way Leah had Archie Bunker speak.
Simple words.
Simple concepts, simple words, and completely bollocking up concepts.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Now, I did want to get into, with that interview with Sean Hannity today. And again, this is about different audiences perceiving things differently. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And Sean brought out that...
Sean, he's your buddy now. Okay.
No, well, Sean, okay. Hannity brought out...
See, that's messaging.
That's messaging. Okay. Hannity brought out the criticism of Trump about being a dictator. And what Trump came back with, and Trump is very good at this, is taking something that's negative and turning it into a positive. And he said, or at least messaging it that way. And he said, well, I'm not going to be a dictator except for one day. Okay, and I'm going to do it to stop immigration and to drill baby drill, essentially those two things, immigration and fuel and oil, and those are two themes. I keep hearing it. I had lunch today with this week with a friend of mine who I hadn't. I've grown up with. I hadn't seen in a while. We ran into each other at a restaurant, and he brought up immigration as a thing. He said, "I don't like Trump, but he's right on immigration." You know, I keep hearing that this is a main thing, immigration, and we got into the oil, and of course, people don't realize the United States is producing more oil now than it ever has, and it's actually exporting it. But that's another subject. But what Trump did was he redefined the idea of what a dictator is. into making it palatable. And I heard Mike Smirkanish and who's the guy that he has on every Wednesday, the political commentator, say this is what he was doing. He has made it such that being a dictator sounds like a good thing, and it's a limiting thing. People will say, well, he's only going to be a dictator for a day, as if being a dictator for a day is in the American tradition. But he's going to repeat that and repeat that and repeat it, and he's going to normalize that. Mm-hmm. And while the left, Democrats, criticize him for being a dictator, the people that follow him think that he's redefined it as a good thing, and they accept it. Mm-hmm. And that's a real danger. And that's, again, how messaging between what is said and who's hearing it and how they interpret it and how it's spun plays out.
Let me ask you this. He's going to, the American political system, like the American corporate system, is a monarchical system, right? The boss decides. Nobody has a vote except the boss.
Right.
So why is that not a dictatorship?
Well, because in the American system, you have a separation of powers, and you have other,
Power-based. At the government level. The government, but within the government, in the cabinet, only the president decides, right? In fact, the unitary theory of government, which the right wing is pushing, is just an attempt to expand the reach of the president into each of the cabinet departments and each of the agencies. But the truth is, there's no cabinet secretary that could stand against the president's policy.
No, but there's a question of micromanaging.
Yeah.
And the president, there's no way the president can, do everything that is in commerce or education, but he can, in fact, remove someone who he doesn't like, or chastise someone who doesn't like,
or tell him that we're not going to have this policy. We're going to have another policy.
Right.
And he could do that. So, why isn't he a dictator?
Well,
what do you mean by dictator, right?
Yeah, well, dictator, because of the way that he goes into office.
But doesn't each dictator, every dictator you think of, he has some group around him, there's always hims, he has some group around him that, he has to form a consensus in that group. There's no significantly sized government that one person without help can dominate.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, but the question is, how does he achieve this fealty? And with Trump and a lot of dictators, it's by fear and intimidation.
Well, and also by law. I have the right to decide and you don't.
Right.
So when he says I'll be dictator, in a certain sense, he's masking the actual way the operation of the government really works. And even the legislature, look. It's the leadership. It's Mike.
Johnson.
In this case, Schumer. Schumer decides what comes to the floor of the Senate. Johnson decides what comes to the floor of the House. Not you. Not me. Not. It's true. There can be a coalition, an enormous number of representatives or senators that can force something to come to the floor. It's very unusual, but by and large, the way it works is the leader decides what comes to the floor. Why isn't that dictatorship?
Well. First of all, because we have this thing called representative government, not direct government. So, we choose that we have to have people that...
But we don't have consensus as a legal requirement.
No, those are the rules. Well, the Constitution says that each House of Congress shall be the decider of their own rules.
And so within each House, they have a leadership which sets the rules and administers the rules, and the rules are that the leader decides.
Well, the rules can change. Don't forget that when Kevin McCarthy was elected, he had to agree to rules changes that said he could be ousted on a vote on a motion that could be brought by only one person.
Exactly. So think about that. He had to agree to that change.
Right. So he wasn't a dictator there.
He wasn't, but he had a group that he had to create a consensus among.
Right.
and then he could become the dictator.
Well, yeah, but it was in such a manner that he was a very weakened dictator.
He was a weakened dictator, I understand, right. And when he didn't do what the consensus required him to do, they kicked him out.
They kicked him out.
Right. Yeah. And by the way, that might happen to Mike Johnson.
Yes. We could talk about it later, but, you know, before we leave this side discussion, by the way, it was Mark Halperin that I was trying to think of talking about the messaging with Mike Smirkanish. But anyway, you know, there's talk about who a Trump cabinet might be in the forthcoming 2025 administration under that rule, and it's a sobering thought to have, you know, Kash Patel got out there and started talking about these folks, having Mike Flynn back in government. Steve Miller is Attorney General.
He's not even a lawyer.
Even Tucker Carlson as
VP,
Vice President, you know, and a lot of this is just blather and what have you, but sort of wish list. But these folks are unchastened. They're going all out to try to make these things so. And it's again, it's double messaging. Because, you know, you get the academics and the Democrats and whatever pointing to these people and yelling and jumping up and down, you know, look at this, look at this, look how terrible it is. And you have the Archie Bunker public saying, I like these people. You know, I like Steve Miller's ideas on immigration. You know, we got to make the military kowtow to the president. Even on unconstitutional matters. So we have that in real time going on.
So do you think are the alleged political opponents, the leadership of the political opposition, the Democrats, how are they effectively countering this? I mean, I don't think they are.
That's a question, yeah. They're not. Well, first of all, they're trying to tell people, and, you know, a few weeks ago we heard the Rhonda and I, we heard that the speaker at the University of Scranton under the Hoban series come in, Danielle Allen, you know, a professor, and she said, you know, you got to first understand it's happening. You got to tell, you know, people have to understand that it's out there. A lot of people just don't get it, and then they have to understand the importance of it. And it's starting to elevate in people's minds. But again, that's messaging, counter messaging. And the other thing, the word that you love so much is organization.
Yes.
That's how you do it.
Actually, I like the concept, not only the word.
Yeah, that's it. And you've got to organize this stuff for it. And what the Democrats are worried about is that the coalition that Joe Biden built, it's still there, but without the a degree of enthusiasm or the degree of concern that they had back in 2020. And they have to get that back. They're showing that he's still supported by blacks and students and women, but except for the women, not as much with far less enthusiasm.
I'm not so sure he supported them. I think that's the coalition that people imagine he represents that supported.
Right.
I mean, you know that the Republicans are not going to stand up for abortion rights,
right,
and are not going to stand up for women's rights in general, because they're busy not standing up for it. They're busy attacking it.
Right.
You're hoping that the Democrats will stand up for it.
Yeah, and that's that the abortion issue is still the top issue among women and Democrats, and it's been the winning issue. The question is, will it continue to be for another 11 months? And who knows what else can intervene in that period. But I wanted to get back, as we mentioned part of the coalition, and we mentioned students. And of course, this week we had a master class in messaging malpractice by three of the president's all of whom happen to be women of major, what are being called elite colleges.
Well, they certainly are elite. Harvard, MIT, Penn.
And Penn, yeah. My alma mater. And it was amazing at how poorly they were prepared for this questioning on Capitol Hill, and how it was viewed by them. You know, they seem to have been thinking that this would be some sort of legal or academic exercise rather than a political exercise. And if they had ever anticipated the question that Elise Stefanik asked them, it certainly didn't show, or showed that, you know, their way of thinking and handling things really did not, to say the least, did not resonate with the public, did not resonate with alumni, and only served to elevate Elise Stefanik rather than...
Which is a condemnation for anybody who does that.
So yes.
A more hypocritical, dishonest, and right. reactionary politician you can't imagine.
I understand she's a Harvard grad, too, but she'll join that long list of Harvard and Yale and Penn graduates who do not show their educational level. You know, the J.D. Vances of the world, and yeah. Although Ben Sasse is, you know, he didn't have any problems messaging down in Florida when these problems arose.
No.
But some of the Democratic politicians were, you know, they didn't jump to the defense of these women. They got out front with their criticism. Governor Shapiro was out there being critical. John Fetterman has been out there being critical of these things. The White House was somewhat critical of this stuff. They didn't get any one of this knee-jerk reaction defense that you might have seen in times past.
Well, because what they said was possibly appropriate in a courtroom. Possibly. I'm not sure it even would have worked in a courtroom. It wouldn't have worked for a jury. It might have worked for a judge.
Or in a classroom.
Maybe a classroom. But no, not in a classroom, because in a classroom, your task is to explicate things, to explain things, well, people to grasp the issue involved and to understand the point of view on whatever sides there are. They didn't do that. They should have done that. They could have done it.
Done that, yeah.
I mean, they had all the opportunity to do it. They could have said, they could have asked her, what are you talking about exactly? They could have said, you know, there is a distinction between speech and action. There is a world of, you know, a whole history of legal precedents about the intersection of speech and action. There are speech absolutists and there are speech restrictionists. I mean, there's a whole history in America about the First Amendment. They didn't get involved in any of that.
Right. And they, you know, Falk's rule number four is you always play offense.
Yeah.
And they were playing defense.
For no reason. For no reason.
For no reason. Yeah. And, you know, they could, as I said, you know, to you before we went on the air, they could have pointed out that not only was calling for genocide of Jews an absolute moral wrong, but so would be the speech that was there at the University of Virginia, Jews shall not replace us.
Right.
And
which was done by good people on that side, according to President Trump.
Yeah, Donald Trump said, "Yeah, we'll find people on both sides."
Yeah,
and turned it back on Elise Stefanik.
Right, you know? Exactly.
And as you said, you question her, or you bring her in. You're saying, "I'm sure you would agree that when someone praises people who are saying that there are good people yelling Jews shall not replace us, that that's that would violate a campus code." But they didn't do that. And the people that prepped them, the lawyers that prepped them, I would have fired them after that.
But these lawyers who prepped them are among the most prestigious lawyers in lawdom, right?
Yeah, big firm.
Wilmer Hale
and people who are supposed to be experts in this thing.
Yeah.
In answering questions on Capitol Hill.
Yeah. It makes you think that expertise is not what it's cracked up to be.
No, it isn't. And again, you know, what world were they living in, or what did they think that they were saying, and what do they think was being heard on those things? But by the way, again, another example of bad messaging was the pro-Palestinian march that was held in Philadelphia, where they went to an Israeli-owned restaurant, a vegetarian restaurant that I've eaten at, Goldie, and they started chanting and making Goldie part of the problem in the Middle East, which it wasn't. And these folks lost the messaging high ground. Governor Shapiro was quick to weigh in on this, to condemn them. Throughout the messaging universe, they lost what they thought that they were going to be gaining. They thought that they could intimidate, and what they wound up doing was undercutting their own position.
Well, you have to be clever. You have to think things through. You can't imagine that because you jump up and down, even if you're right, even if morality is on your side, your problem is to convince other people, not to demonstrate to God that you're pure. If you think your problem is to demonstrate to God that you're pure, you do whatever you want to do. But if you think your problem is to convince others, and which is what your problem is if you're an organizer, you got to think it through. How will this be accepted? How will this be understood? What do I have to say to get people to grasp what it is I'm trying to say?
Yeah. Well, you're back to, you know, getting God to understand. You're back to Mike Johnson.
That's right. Right.
And of course, he's messaging to this, you know, MAGA evangelical base, but what he's now created is a backlash among everybody else who realizes that this is really taking things to a real extreme. That, you know, comparing yourself to Moses is not, you know, a winning universal strategy.
Well, that gets back to the fact that however good your messaging may be, the thing that it's proposing, if it is bad, no messaging can overcome that, no matter how clever you are. Then your problem is, how do I disguise what I'm trying to get across? But if you're actually trying to get it across and it's really detrimental to people, you're stuck. Yeah. And he's stuck. He really believes in what he's saying, and what he's saying is so horrible, and everybody can see it. Messaging isn't going to help this guy.
No. Talk about disguising. He let some of the videos that were turned over to Congress from January 6th, and he was blurring out the faces of the perpetrators.
I know.
Just as if...
That's kosher.
Yeah, well, if that's kosher, I call that accessory after the fact.
Yeah,
it does. Yeah, as if the FBI and law enforcement doesn't know who these people, hasn't seen their pictures already.
But the point is, you're conspiring to prevent justice.
Yes,
that's what he was doing, and he seems completely innocent of the knowledge that that's what he's doing. Why? Because he's on their side.
Yeah,
he's on their side. That's it, and he's trying to protect his side. Well, anyway, we're done with this week.
Yeah,
that's the message of the hour. We're done.
That's the message. Happy Hanukkah for everybody. Hanukkah. It's still going on for another few days.
And the message there being, if you fight, you can win.
Yes. And organize.
That's what that holiday is all about. All right. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.